from WBUR Boston and WRNI Providence. I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. You may have thought that the slave trade was wiped out by the Civil War. Well, it wasn't. Not then, and not now. Speaking Tuesday before the United Nations, President Bush surprised many when he turned from Iraq and terrorism to the trafficking in humans, to contemporary slavery, to forced labor and prisoners of the global sex trade. It is a dark and booming business. Tonight on Point, modern day slavery and the global industry that traffics in humans. Did you think that slavery was a thing of the past? How in 2003 can there be an estimated 27 million people in slavery? You can join the conversation tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Joining me now from Washington is Jolene Smith, co-founder of Free the Slaves. Jolene, thank you for being with us tonight.
My pleasure.
Also with me from New York is Antonio Maria Costa, executive director of the United Nations Office on Drugs and Crime. Good evening and welcome, Antonio Maria Costa.
Thank you very much. Good evening.
Thank you so much for taking the time to be with us. And with me in the studio tonight is On Point news analyst Jack Beatty, senior editor at the Atlantic Monthly. Hello, Jack. Good to have
you
here.
Hello, Tom. Hello to our guests.
I want to hear from Antonio Maria Costa in just a moment exactly what's going on at the international level to address this problem. But Jolene, if you'd be kind enough first, Jolene Smith, to just give us the dimensions. President Bush was talking some big numbers last night. What are the dimensions of the global slave trade trafficking in humans?
Sadly, it's a problem that has gotten worse, and it's actually the worst it's ever been in human history. There are now 27 million slaves in the world, and that's more than double the number of people who were enslaved during all of the 300-plus years of the transatlantic slave trade.
And in what kind Most of people, circumstances are these people generally?
A lot of the people are enslaved in agriculture labor, mining. They're going into local economies, and actually less than 10% of the world's slaves are trafficked. However, the trafficked people end up in forms of labor such as prostitution, agriculture worker working here in the United States, and pretty much any industry you can imagine.
Less than 10% trafficked, meaning fewer than 10% actually moved across borders, sold here and there.
That's right.
So, and when you say slavery today is worse than it's been in human history, and you put your finger on this number of 27 million, would these people and their circumstances be immediately recognized as slavery by, I don't know, if someone could step into our current moment from the year, 1850, would this still look like slavery, or is it somehow different? Is it milder? Is it less onerous?
In many ways, it's much more onerous than it ever has been. That's not to say that slaves in the past didn't have a horrific existence, but because the price of slaves has plummeted to such a drastic degree, slaves are now disposable. The average slave now costs only $90. In the world economy. And in 1850, Mississippi, for example, in today's money, a slave would cost $40,000. So because of the low price, because of the glut of people in this world who are vulnerable to slavery, slaveholders can simply dump the slaves or kill them when they're no longer needed.
Ooh. Antonio Maria Costa, you are charged with helping address this problem globally. Does the picture of the global trafficking in humans, of global slavery that you carry around in your mind match up with what Jolene Smith is describing for us here in its numbers and in its character?
Broadly speaking, I would certainly agree with what was just said. Indeed, it is a problem which has been growing in size, but more than anything else, it has been growing in our understanding of it. And that better understanding usually is associated with larger numbers. The news which I was hoping to share with you tonight, the good news, is that the recent protocol against the trafficking of human beings, which was agreed upon about 18 months ago by the United Nations, would enter into effect. Unfortunately, the case is not yet. Namely, the protocol will probably be entered into effect within a few months only because not all member countries have, not an adequate number of member countries have ratified. But the same good news I would like to share that this will soon enter into effect and this would make quite a change.
And what would those changes be? How will they address what Jolene Smith calls the worst wave of slavery in history?
This may be a bit technical, but I hope your radio listeners will appreciate it. About 2 years ago, The international community agreed on the first convention against organized crime. Associated to this convention, there are three protocols. One is indeed against the trafficking of human beings. The convention itself will enter into effect on the 29th of September, namely next week. And the protocol against human trafficking, as I mentioned earlier, is somewhat delayed because we are not there yet in terms of numbers. What will change? Certainly will criminalize activities associated with the human trafficking. It will render the bilateral agreements enforceable. It will facilitate extradition. It will facilitate the cooperation and the sharing of information among law enforcement agencies. It will indeed establish a number of procedures which at the moment have been left to the voluntary decision-making of government, will make them mandatory, and above all, will make them bilaterally or multilaterally, depending on the sources and the destination of these poor human beings.
Antonio Maria Costa, stand by. Jolene Smith, I'd just like to hear from you. What's your level of optimism, confidence about these new global protocols coming online? Do you feel confident that these will make a difference in the slavery picture you described?
They will make a difference, and Mr. Costa has provided expert leadership in this regard. Unfortunately, the United States is one of those countries that has not yet ratified.
Wait a minute. Why President Bush is raising the torch at the UN. Why has the U.S. not signed on?
That's a very good question. I'd actually like to hear from Mr. Costa exactly why that might be. But also, I think that this is something that the United States, until very recently, hasn't taken seriously.
This just doesn't add up with what we saw in the president standing in the well of the UN General Assembly yesterday. Antonio Maria Costa, what are the issues that still has the United States holding back on ratifying this slavery protocol?
I addressed the issue with our friends and colleagues at the State Department. There is no matter of principle on the part of the United States opposing the ratification of this protocol, or for that matter, even the Convention Against Organized Crime. They haven't ratified that either. I was told, and I believe this is the case, it is a matter of negotiations between the administration and Congress. Of course, ratification implies a statement, a decision by Congress, and we know that the procedures are a bit heavy on this side, but there is no ill intention. Quite to the contrary, I believe the U.S. will ratify both the convention and the protocols as a matter of a few months.
Jolene Smith, you follow this closely. Is that your impression as well, that this is just a matter of time? The U.S. is coming on board. We have seen the U.S. hold back from any number of international conventions, the International Criminal Court and others. Are you confident that Washington's on board?
We certainly hope that President Bush's remarks yesterday would tell us that this is a priority and that it would indeed be ratified. We will certainly do our best to make sure that happens. But, of course, we feel a special urgency, as I know all of us who work against slavery and trafficking do. It's actually people's lives at stake now. People are dying in slavery now. So although we appreciate that UN protocols have to run a certain course, it's our job to be impatient. And if we weren't impatient about this issue, then we would not be really understanding the full effects of modern slavery.
Jolene Smith, President Bush focused in particular on the sex trade and trafficking in essentially sex slaves before the UN. What portion of the global slave population, if that's the way to describe it, is involved in the sex industry? Is it the biggest part?
It's really hard for us to tell, but we know that the largest numbers of people in slavery are actually involved mainly in agriculture and mining. It's really the most dirty, dangerous types of work, and in many ways, the work closest to the ground that involves slaves. That's the easiest to hide in some cases, but it's also the work that no one else wants to do. Of course, forced prostitution falls into that category as well, forced prostitution has gotten a lot of press here in the United States. Fair enough, it's horrific. But there are also other forms of slavery here in the U.S., and I believe that the press has taken the issue of sex slavery because it really does grab one's attention.
Well, not just the press, Jack Beatty, the president himself. That's really where he put his emphasis before the world yesterday.
Yes, and there's some evidence that this was partly a matter of his own conscience, but partly under the suasion of his conservative base, who've been making this an issue for some years, and certainly to their credit. Yet, you know, one has to note the irony that just while he's talking about the health and well-being of women and girls, giving lip service to that thus far in the speech, just a few weeks ago, the administration halted payments to a consortium of refugee health clinics that deal with reproductive health for women. Did it because the clinics had something to do with abortions in China, although they denied it. And the effect is that women are, in Africa, are going to suffer. A quarter million women in Africa die each year from complications in pregnancy, many of which are preventable and many of which could be prevented through these clinics, the money for which is now being cut. The head of the group in Kenya said this. He says, Bush does not realize how many people are going to suffer. If you don't give money to this consortium, does he know how many deaths he will cause?
But Jack, you're taking us off to health clinics. That's okay. That lives in its own world. But does that mean the president, the world, shouldn't be pushing to try and clean up slaves?
I'm just pointing out the contrast here. This is action. That was words. This is about the real health of women. This is words about the potential health of women. It just strikes me as hypocritical. And in addition, this particular policy about this abortion is right out of that same Christian conservative base. It's this gag rule that was the first action of his administration. So, yes, they want him to get rid of sex trafficking, fine. But on the other side, women in Africa are going to die because we won't give a pittance to some of these clinics.
Antonio Maria Costa, I want to be sure we understand the full view you've got of this issue there. You deal with drugs and crime, and very often this traffic in humans is quite closely tied to both of those.
You are very right. And there is another dimension, the health dimension, the HIV dimension. Perhaps there is a difference in emphasis, not in views, between ourselves and the speaker, especially from Washington. Because freed slavery, it's about freeing the slaves, so whether they are at home or whether they are internationally trafficked, and this is a merit worthy, extremely important activity. The protocol of the United Nations is about the international human trafficking. And in this respect, the victims of this international human trafficking are mostly in the sex industry, whether pedophilia or just a commercial sex industry. The countries of origins are well known in Eastern Europe and Central Europe, some of them in Far East Asia. The countries of destinations are also well known, indeed the U.S., indeed for North America, I would say, Western Europe, but also within the group of the developing countries, there is a lot of international human trafficking, and our protocol is essentially about stopping or, in any event, controlling this specific dimension of human slavery.
And what about the agriculture workers, the mining workers that Jolene Smith describes as making up the great bulk of slaves globally? They're not trafficked across borders. Do you agree that that's the bigger number? And how do they become slaves?
They become slaves because of economic conditions, because of kidnapping, because of ethnic wars, because of strife within countries, or just because of the logic of the economic system in these countries. But most of these, the ones we just referred to, are usually not traded internationally. They are within either a country or across the border from one country to another within the same ethnic groups, the ethnic groups are straddled across the border.
What a picture. And Jolene Smith, you describe them as having suffering circumstances maybe even worse than the historical slave trade.
In many cases, yes. And as Mr. Costa pointed out, the majority of trafficked victims do end up in sexual slavery, in which case they are incredibly prone to contracting HIV, any number of STDs, and actually have a very short lifespan. Mm-hmm. So in many cases, if someone is forced into prostitution, it is a death sentence.
Maybe a death sentence. Well, we're going to come back and look at, in more detail, at how this happens, why it happens, and where, and what might be done to effectively confront it. Antonio Maria Costa, I know we have to let you go, but we're grateful to you for being with us tonight.
Okay,
Thanks so much for joining us. Antonio Maria Costa, Executive Director of the United Nations Office on Drugs and Crime. We're talking tonight about modern-day slavery and the global industry of trafficking in humans. Did you think that slavery ended with the Civil War? is the global slave trade invisible to you? And is a debt-bondaged sex worker any less a slave than a laborer in chains? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about the modern-day slave trade, the global industry of trafficking in humans. President Bush stepped to the podium yesterday at the United Nations, and when he was finished talking about Iraq and talking about terrorism, suddenly, out of the blue for many listeners, came a message on global slavery.
There's a special evil in the abuse and exploitation of the most innocent and vulnerable. The victims of sex trade see little of life before they see the very worst of life, an underground of brutality and lonely fear. Those who create these victims and profit from their suffering must be severely punished. Those who patronize this industry debase themselves and deepen the misery of others. And governments that tolerate this trade are tolerating a form of slavery.
President Bush, yesterday at the United Nations, we're talking tonight about modern-day slavery. You can join the conversation. Does the international community have the will to stop the slavery of the sex trade that the president talked about there, of slavery that goes on in agriculture, in mining? Should the United States prosecute Americans who go abroad on sex tours? Did you think that slavery ended with the Civil War? You can join us tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. My guest tonight is Jolene Smith. She's co-founder and deputy director of Free the Slaves. She joins us tonight from Washington, D.C. We're joined on the phone right now by a caller, Charles, calling from Boston, Massachusetts. Hi, Boston. Charles, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you. Sure. My name is Charles Jacobs, and I'm the president of the American Anti-Slavery Group based here in Boston, and I know Kevin Bale's work, and it's wonderful.
This is Kevin at the Free the Slaves group,
yes.
Jolene Smith's colleague.
Kevin actually is probably the world's expert on modern-day slavery, and everybody should read his book, Disposable People.
Mm-hmm.
My question is, and my topic is, why is slavery the stepchild of the human rights community? That is, this is the one human right that is, one might can say, the most fundamental right of all, that is not to be owned by another person. There are more slaves today than at any time in human history. There are more of slaves than there are Canadians.
So why do you... I'll have to take some time later to pull that on board entirely, but why do you say it's the stepchild of the human rights community?
Because this, before we began our work, and Kevin began his work, no major established large human rights group has taken this on. The United Nations flees from this because some of its members are indeed complicit in the slave trade. And, you know, the gentleman's rule at the United Nations is to protect thy fellow nation state no matter what he does to his people.
We should have had you on to challenge Antonio Maria Costa, who's saying they're about to step up with a new protocol. You don't buy it?
Well, they'll do this. You know what they'll do? They'll do things that don't have to do with governments, that have to do with mafiosis. And they should. I mean, this is all important. But they won't touch Mauritania. They won't touch Sudan, where there's the jihad slaves. In fact, there's an escaped slave living in Boston whose book, it'll be the first slave narrative book in modern times, has just come out. Francis Bach is quite famous in the Boston area. They won't touch Myanmar, which uses government troops raid villages, and they, at gunpoint, tell people to build roads. So they won't touch the things that have having to do with government. And the other thing is that the human rights community is really mostly concerned. It's mostly white, decent white people who, when they see evil done by people like themselves, feel a special animus to do something. But when they see evil done by non-Westerners, shrink from that. And indeed, most of the slaves in this world are enslaved by non-Westerners, and it's not politically correct. There's embarrassment about talking about it, and I think that's the reason. I've written this in the Boston Globe. I call it the human rights complex. I think that's the reason why the black slaves of Sudan, for example, don't count in the human rights community.
Jolene Smith, let me bring you in and ask you, do you see that dynamic here, that this somehow gets pushed to the back of the bus as an issue?
It certainly has until now, and I think just now we're starting to scratch the surface. But what we have going for us is that the average American, the average person, the working class individual really does care about this issue once they know about it. but the awareness is still low. So that's a job that we have, and that other groups like Charles's group needs to do more of, is just educate those people. We can all get behind the fact that slavery is wrong and it must end. It is abhorrent to people that we talk to.
Do you have the same skepticism about the United Nations going after it, that they have member nations who are complicit, even kind of part of the trade, that they're not going to touch?
I think how we should judge every institution is the, you know, the proof is in the pudding. And up until this point, the UN has done certain things, clearly, but they have not done certain things. And the UN Working Group on Contemporary Forms of Slavery is an example of a place that really could step up the pressure, and to this date hasn't.
Charles.
I mean, I think that's scandalous. I mean, I think that's really an issue that the human rights community has to look at. How can it be that there are 27 million slaves, as Kevin says, and he's right, and yet the human rights community doesn't want to touch it? It's just not politically correct.
We've got that point. I want to ask you about U.S. policy, if I may. They just came out over the summer with the third annual Trafficking in Persons report. This is the one that President Bush was apparently quoting yesterday, saying that 800,000 or 900,000 persons are trafficked across borders annually, that 18,000 to 20,000 of those are trafficked into the United States, and it points fingers. It puts countries into tiers, depending on how badly abusive they are. In the worst tier, they've got Belize and Bosnia-Herzegovina, Burma, Cuba, Dominican Republic, Georgia, Greece, Haiti, Kazakhstan, Liberia, North Korea, Sudan, Suriname, Turkey, Uzbekistan. So is the United States here by laying the numbers down and naming names? Is it doing the right thing?
Well, the United States is doing the job of the United Nations. The United States actually is, because of the pressure from underneath, I think Jolene's group and our group and groups like Freedom House, because we've really made a new human rights community here that is based on, you know, as she says, the average man and woman in America. We are an abolitionist nation. I mean, we disagree on everything in the world, you know, gender, war, abortion, but if you're an American, you're an American because you know one thing, that no man should be owned by another, and that's the power of this. So it doesn't surprise me at all that the United States and President Bush is in the front of this, and that the United Nations is not.
And Jolene, the United States has announced that it's going to impose economic sanctions, just in the last couple of weeks, off of this act on Burma, Cuba, and North Korea. Out of all those Tier 3 worst abusers, does it make sense that these are the main targets of an anti-trafficking sanction by the United States? Are these the worst offenders, Cuba, Burma, or Myanmar, and North Korea?
Clearly, Burma belongs on that list. I don't think anyone would debate that except the dictatorship in Burma. As far as North Korea goes, unfortunately, there's a dearth of research in that region, and we simply don't know, and that is clearly a problem.
I mean, we know they kidnapped a few Japanese decades ago, but I don't, and maybe the U.S. government considers their entire system is creating slaves, but you don't hear about slave traffic there. And what about Cuba?
Cuba is interesting because in order to actually be placed in a tier, the State Department had to verify that there were at least 100 cases of trafficking within a country. So there may be a lot of countries off of this list, they're not all tiered, that have much worse trafficking problems, but simply there isn't the research to show that they do have the problem, therefore they're not ranked. So a country like Cuba. So a country like Cuba clearly is not seen in the best light by the Bush administration or the State Department. So it's not surprising to me that they ended up on that list. However, we have to take it in the context of the entire system, and the Trafficking in Persons report is clearly set up in a very specific way.
There they are near the top of the list. Charles Jacobs, just one more question for you. Your group, the American Anti-Slavery Group, is famous and controversial for going out into the world and buying slaves, buying their freedom, if I've got that right. You've been lauded for that and criticized for, in effect, becoming part of the slave trade. How do you respond to that? And what do you make of Jolene's number of $90 as the average going world price for a slave?
I would think her number is right. We are engaged in a controversy with the United Nations and UNICEF in specific. UNICEF is the premier protector of women and children in the world, and they failed to act in Sudan, where we concentrated most of our efforts. And we don't like to buy back slaves. It's the last resort.
How many have you bought?
We cooperate with Christian Solidarity International, which is a Swiss-based human rights group, and they have freed up to about 90,000 slaves. And this is an issue that American abolitionists debated a long time ago. We bought, as American abolitionists, the freedom of Frederick Douglass. We didn't think that was a sin to do. We thought it was a good thing to do. I have been to Sudan, and I have seen people freed from slavery, and I've interviewed them, and no one says, gee, you should have left us there, I'll tell you. So I think it's a good thing to do, but it's a terribly hard thing to do, and we shouldn't have to do it. And if the international community and if the human rights community were doing its job, no one would have to do this.
I guess that's right. Charles Jacobs, president of the American Anti-Slavery Group, thanks for calling in tonight. Good to hear from
you. Thank you.
I want to welcome to our conversation now Linda Smith. She joins us from Washington, D.C. She is founder and president of Shared Hope International. She represented Washington State's 3rd District in Congress from 1994 to 1998. Good evening and welcome, Linda Smith.
It's good to be with you.
Linda, you've become a crusader against slavery globally. I wish you'd tell us how you went from American politics to the global slave trade. What drew you to this issue?
One little girl, just one little girl. I was working on two issues in Congress. One, the sale of human organs, which is a kind of trafficking, traffic someone to harvest their liver or whatever. Mm-hmm. It was an issue I was working on, and also kept running into the issue of the sale of women and children worldwide. Obviously, there's other kinds of trafficking, but that's what caught my attention. And I got a call one night, and I was asked to come, please just come see what another person had seen. And it was rows on rows of little girls in forced slavery.
Where?
Mumbai, India.
Mumbai, Bombay.
Which is Bombay. Mm-hmm. That's the Hindu name, Mumbai. Bombay mm-hmm. was what mm-hmm. the British called it. Mm-hmm. And it left me with the inability to sleep. And so I arranged for my staff, one person eventually, to go with me, and I left. And I only had about 48 hours in country, a very short period of time, maybe a little more than that, but not much, because it's nearly a two-day trip to get there. And so I asked to be taken in a secure vehicle into the middle of the brothel, and the area where they told me about. And the group was Teen Challenge International, having an international meeting around the world. They're different. All over the world, they do different things. Here in America, they are drug treatment. Around the world, they often deal with street children.
Mm-hmm.
And so I went in, and I met a little girl. And all of a sudden, I realized, as they take them out about every 15 minutes to use them, a manager, that they were so openly doing it. It wasn't a problem. They weren't embarrassed. They weren't worried about police.
It was just par for the course there.
Yeah. And as I looked at this little girl, I touched her, and she kind of, like one of my grandkids, kind of fell into me, and I touched the person. And I realized she was about the age of my 11-year-old granddaughter.
Hard to imagine that fate. Linda Smith, this has been an issue that's been picked up by evangelical Christian groups around the country and around the world. I think that was part of your path to this issue as well, if I've got that right. Am I correct?
Oh, I think we all have base issues that drive us. We have a set of values that drive us. In Congress, I was a human rights activist. I worked with Pelosi. I worked mm-hmm. with, you know, all the different Democrats and Republicans, because it was an important issue to me. And so I was there really as Congresswoman Smith. And yet the heart of me is I believe that everyone is made by God and valued. So when I get into a society that devalues little girls, certainly my belief that you are special and individually precious does drive me. But I think what was driving me that night was what drives so many of us who are so diverse in this. And I think with President Bush, and this has been an issue that he's worked on for 3 years quietly. He's been directing the agencies. He's put nearly $75 million into it. He's directed them to focus on it at the embassy level. I think there's something inside of it that drives you because it's so awful, and it's so victimizing to the most vulnerable. And for me, I just go, okay, this little girl, do I walk away? And if I do, what can I do with me? So I think that drives a lot of people of different beliefs.
And why do you think the president raised this in his speech yesterday? There was a lot on Iraq and terror that people expected. This was kind of unexpected. The Washington Post quotes a Republican consultant, Scott Reed, today, saying that President Bush went at this because it covers the Christian conservatives and the soccer moms. At the same time, he says it's an issue that moderate, independent women can warm to because it shows the softer side of Bush. That seems like a cynical interpretation. Is it justified?
It certainly could be a result, but I don't think it's a motive, because we have been pushing the White House for 3 years, we being in the advocacy groups, to speak about it, and periodically they put it in speeches, you know, and we keep shooting things at them, and the Trafficking in Persons office does, and we've had answers back from his folks, you know, speechwriters, that doesn't really, even if people care about it, it's not really a strong political issue, blah, 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 blah. And then he will insert it himself in his speeches. So I don't really know. You know, when it came out that much, I think part of that is George Bush. They're not voters. They're just not voters.
Who is not voters? The slaves vulnerable. Around the world?
The vulnerable, the kids that are trafficked, the women that are trafficked, the slave labor, the agriculture workers. And in fact, when you poll on the issue of illegal immigrants, most people in America just consider them an illegal immigrant. They don't see them or a prostitute. Especially if it's sex trafficking.
They don't see the slave angle.
Uh-uh. And so it really is not that strong, I don't think, of an issue. But we knew if we could get him to say it internationally, he'd run it up the poll. And even if in the overall speech people disagree with the way he handled Iraq or whatever, the world would hear about sex trafficking. The world would hear about the age of the child. And maybe the world would take action more than they have, even if it was in a confrontational situation that was difficult. It was a high-focus situation.
But he did give it a lot of attention. Jack Beatty, how do you interpret the timing of the president's sudden international focus on slavery, human trafficking?
Well, it's a valence issue. It's what politicians call a valence issue. You can't be against it. It's, obviously people just think, well, that's terrible. It's an outrage. Something should be done. And I think it also has the feeling to me of Karen Hughes. I may be entirely wrong about this, but when she was his campaign main political operative, she specialized in the softer Bush. She specialized in positioning the Bush as governor and as presidential candidate behind unexceptionable issues. But in other words, to seem to be expressing some sort of consensus. She did this in Texas on parental rights, about consultations on abortions. She did it. Her tone in speeches was always to just think of just a woman that she put it this way, to think of the woman watching television at home and saying, that's terrible. And I think that shows, if that shows Karen Hughes, and if she's coming back, that could be good news for the president, because she worked a lot better for him than some of these hard bars he's had, seems to me.
Certainly good news for campaigners against slavery. And we have two of them with us tonight, Jolene Smith and Linda Smith. You can join the conversation as well. We're talking about modern-day slavery. Did you think that slavery ended with the Civil War? Is the global slave trade invisible to you? And does the international community have the will to stop the slavery of the sex trade? We're at 1-800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about modern-day slavery and the global industry of trafficking in humans. My guests tonight from Washington, D.C., Jolene Smith. She's co-founder and deputy director of Free the Slaves. And also from Washington, Linda Smith, founder and president of Shared Hope International. She represented Washington State's 3rd District in Congress from 1994 until 1998. You can join this conversation as well. How, in the year 2003, can there be an estimated 27 million human beings held in slavery? Should the United States prosecute Americans who go on sex tours abroad? And do you even know if the jeans you're wearing were stitched by slaves? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Jolene Smith, President Bush pointed at the connection between organized crime and the trafficking in humans, human slavery. Can you paint that picture for us? How does this business, this industry, actually work?
Unfortunately, trafficking is third only to drugs and arms smuggling in terms of profitability for organized crime. So it really is bread and butter for them. And we actually find that in many cases, it's the same criminal rings who normally traffic drugs or guns will find that the penalties are often stiffer for those two commodities than they are for human beings. And human beings have the added benefit of being able to be sold again and again.
If you had a map of the world and you wanted to draw on it the major flows in trafficking from X to Y to Z, where are the major flows?
Oh, that's easy. So find the richest countries and make them the destination. Find the poorest countries and make them the countries through which from which the people are going. And the middle-income countries are the transit countries. It's as easy as that.
So Antonio Maria Costa was talking about Eastern Europe, Central Europe, and the former Soviet Union. Is that a major source today?
Absolutely, absolutely. As far as we can understand, that's the region that has seen the greatest increase in trafficking in recent years. And it makes sense. We can all open tomorrow's front page of the New York Times and see which hotspot is having the worst humanitarian crisis. And we can know that within a month or two, we will see those people trafficked across international borders.
Is it a post-Cold War phenomenon then? Did that kind of unlock the world? Is that part of what's pushing the numbers up?
It's part of it only insofar as it makes people vulnerable. So we know that perhaps slavery was always going on, even after 1865, but there was a strong resurgence after World War II. There was a population explosion. The world's population tripled. So we have a lot of people. Secondly, those people are no longer able to subsist as they traditionally would. Mm-hmm. Subsistence agriculture is no longer sustainable for many communities. Those people, instead of staying within their social safety nets, their villages, they're traveling to the cities. And there aren't very few jobs there. And in fact, the population increased precisely in those places that could least handle it. So we have lots of people. We have people who are poor and without jobs, but unfortunately that doesn't make them slaves. We have to add a third component, the last peg to the stool, and that's government corruption. And because government corruption can actually buy violence, that means that any unscrupulous employer can buy off the police to turn a blind eye, can buy off a commissioner to turn a blind eye, and therefore they actually hold people under their threat of violence or actual physical violence.
So not just corruption in getting people across borders, but corruption in holding them in servitude in their forced labor.
That's necessary because slavery is not legal in any country in the world.
And yet it goes on in unbelievable numbers. Tatiana's calling from Janeville, Wisconsin. Hi, Tatiana. You're on the air.
Hi.
Good evening.
I have a question. When you talk about slaver ship, it's not supposed to be under gun. It's supposed to be under hunger. If you have no choice, to feed your, no money to feed your kids, you will do whatever they want you to do.
Yes.
This is a problem. It doesn't matter. You buy the slave, you let them go where he's going or she's going.
So you're saying, Tatiana, it doesn't necessarily require a gun. Poverty
Absolutely.
And desperation is enough to make it happen. Have you seen this happen? Do you have firsthand experience?
Yes, I saw it all over the former Soviet Union area. And you talk about sex traffic in Europe and all over the world. It's exactly slavery, but women have no choice. They have kids at home. They do it. I was working in the travel business. I saw it so many times. It's unbelievable. But they know what they are doing, but they have no choice.
You mean
you don't need gun?
This would be young women coming out of the former Soviet Union, knowing what they're getting into, not fooled, fooled by someone with sweet talk or a picture that's not true, but actually knowing and going anyway because of desperation, you're saying?
Absolutely. This is a problem. You work for government, they pay you nothing. You cannot survive yourself. You don't talk about your 2-3 kids at home.
Mm-hmm. Tatiana, stand by. Jolene Smith, respond to this. Tatiana's describing people walking, it voluntarily sounds like the wrong word, but of their own volition into slavery.
There's a particular cruel irony about trafficking. It tends to haunt the people who are actually more ambitious, who will take more risks, people who are hungry for opportunity and education, and therefore, if they think that there might be a chance that they could have a better life, they could actually get on the plane or get in the truck and have a better job, have any job at all, then they will take it.
And suddenly, you know, they're in change. Tatiana or Linda?
Yes, well, we work in Moldova, and it's absolute. She's right. Both the caller and Jolene, mm-hmm. that women in desperation will do anything. But the traffickers have targeted these countries, and they go in with a strategy, and they are very calculated. That's why the Wargans Trafficking Alliance, which is an alliance of international groups that we have started, we literally identify the same countries and try to organize against the traffickers. In Moldova, which is a former Soviet state, mm-hmm. there are girls that are kept in institutions, poor girls or orphans, until they're 17, 18, they're dumped on the street. Well, the traffickers know this. They have minimal education, no opportunity. There's no jobs there. And so they literally are there, and they'll convince them how wonderful it would be to go to another country as a bride or mm-hmm. work, and they get them there, and they pull the country, and they pull their papers. But I think the big thing is that where there's tolerated or legalized prostitution, we're finding many of those girls from the Russian state. Mm.
Linda Smith, stand by. Tatiana, thanks for your call. I want to get one more call. Julie's calling from Erie, Pennsylvania. Hi, Julie. You're on the air.
Yes, hi. Thank you for taking my call. My question is, I'm an activist in my own community, and I try and do what I can locally. And a friend told me about the slave trade, and my response was, a little bit ambivalent, because I feel like, well, what do you want me to do? So my question for your guests is, how can someone locally take action on this issue?
Julie, we've got it. Our time is short. Let us pick it up right there. I'll ask each of you, Linda, if you can just give a couple of clear steps. People maybe move to want to act very quickly. How can they respond? How can citizens respond?
Well, first, you can go to www.sharedhope.org, and we network with, and you can take links to many other places of all the many groups that are working on this. You can also speak about it and become involved in it. I don't mean in trafficking, but every community has a shelter. Every country, every state in America, actually, has trafficking, because if girls are brought in from the community, they're used in strip joints, they come under the definition of trafficking.
So watch out what's going on in your own community. And Jolene Smith, our time is short, but your advice to listeners who want to do something.
Sure. There's actually a vote going on very soon here in Congress. Go to freetheslaves.net. You can email your congressperson. It's actually to give more money to the State Department to fight this crime, and it's coming up within the next couple of weeks. Also, buy fair trade, folks. That's our best assurance that your goods do not contain slave labor.
Fair trade products. And with that, we're nearly out of time, but Jolene Smith, Deputy Director of Free the Slaves, thank you for joining us tonight.
My pleasure.
And Linda Smith, founder and president of Shared Hope International, thank you very much for being with us.
You're
as
welcome.
Well. Jack Beatty, there is so much that goes on in this world every day that we live in blithe ignorance of, and this is now put right in front of us.
Yes, and it moved the president to the most eloquent sentence of his presidency to me. He spoke of the underground of brutality and lonely fear of people caught in this life.
And too many. Jack, stand by. We've got something else I want to look at here, but what a subject right there. Slavery in 2003. Listeners, you can continue this conversation at onpointradio.org. Click on forums. In a moment, Pakistan's president takes the podium at the United Nations. This is On Point. President Bush's plea for international support for the policing and reconstruction of Iraq has largely fallen on deaf ears at the United Nations. Even one of his key allies in the war on terror today gave the idea of sending troops only lukewarm support. Pakistan's president, General Pervez Musharraf, said he would consider committing troops only if other Muslim nations joined a UN-sanctioned force in Iraq. That could take months to hammer out, and so far other Muslim nations have not been eager to send soldiers.
Earlier in the day, Musharraf took his turn addressing the General Assembly. He criticized India over the Kashmir standoff, and he said his country is doing everything it can to combat terrorism. Here's an excerpt from General Musharraf's address.
The tragedy of 9/11 transformed security policies and changed geopolitical calculations. Pakistan took a strategic decision based on the principles of humanity and our national interest to support the war on terrorism. Our intentions should be in no doubt whatsoever. Our actions speak louder than words. Our capabilities were limited, but have been progressively improved. We are acting against Al-Qaeda and its associates very effectively. We have also acted against other organizations or groups involved in any form of terrorism. Pakistan will remain in the forefront of the war against terrorism. The war against terrorism must be fought comprehensively on a global front with vision and with understanding. It should not erode the moral values of our societies. It must not be hijacked by those who seek to use it as an excuse to suppress other peoples. It must not be allowed to engender a clash of civilizations, a clash between Islam and the West. It is unfortunate that great religions, which should be a source of hope, tolerance, and peace, are seen as being pitted against each other. Many Muslims believe their eternal faith is being demonized. They see Muslim peoples being cruelly suppressed and demanding freedom and equality, or targeted for discrimination and worse. On the other hand, the West perceives the Islamic world as volatile and hostile, bent upon striking at Western values. Muslims are often seen as fanatics, extremists, and terrorists. This moment in history calls for reflection, introspection, and action. The thesis of a clash of civilizations is a travesty. We must bridge the gulf of misunderstanding between the Islam and the West. We must be the catalysts of change, not the prophets of doom.
Pakistan's President General Pervez Musharraf speaking before the United Nations General Assembly earlier today. Jack Beattie, here is a head of state straddling a terrible gap and trying to work both sides.
Yes, and with an intelligence service, you know, that helped to set up the Taliban, that helped really do, when we were our last intervention in that part of the world, we were funneling money through them to create a jihad against the Soviets. These are the people who did it. Some of them are still there. We just learned recently that there was a high intelligence person involved in funding somewhere in the chain of September 11th. So, and he's sitting on Islamic parties. He's got 30,000 madrasas turning out more and more hardly educated young people. He's in a very, very difficult position.
And a nuclear-armed nation beneath him. On the one hand, here he's saying, don't demonize Muslims, don't make this into a clash of civilizations, don't hijack the war on terror to oppress other nations, all this appealing to a crowded home. On the Western hand, saying, we are solidly in the war on terror. Quite a gap.
Yes, and we've had people on our show telling us that they are not solidly in the war on terror, describing to us what goes on in the north of Pakistan, where Al-Qaeda, well, certainly the Taliban, are recruiting to go into Afghanistan again, and Pakistan is doing nothing about it.
And where Osama bin Laden may be lounging this very evening.
That's right.
Jack, thanks for being with us tonight. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.